anniversary of the killing of Michael Brown and the Ferguson uprising, police indictments, a national convening, and new petitions to the Department of Justice. All that and more coming up next. And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for July 30th, 2015 on 89.3 FM, WPFW, your Pacifica listener-powered station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. On the Ground and onthegroundshow.org are devoted to coverage of social justice activists and activism here in the DMV, the nation, and around the planet. I'm Esther Avarum, and I want to first thank all of you who called this show and helped us make our goal during our emergency fund drive last week. Well, as we near the one-year anniversary of the uprising in Ferguson, Missouri, which occurred after the killing of unarmed teenager Michael Brown by police officer Darren Wilson, we'll continue with our conversations with activists both here in the DMV and around the country. We'll go outside the Department of Justice, where right now activists are delivering new petitions to the DOJ demanding a federal investigation into the death of Sandra Bland in Texas and into the entire Waller County Police Department and Prosecutor's Office. As always, we have a lot to get to today, starting with our headlines. University of Cincinnati police officer Ray Tensing has been indicted on a murder charge in the fatal shooting death of Samuel DeBose, who was pulled over in a routine traffic stop on July 19th. The indictment coincided with the release by Hamilton County prosecutor of graphic body cam video that shows the 43-year-old DeBose being shot in the head at close range. The video contradicts the claim by Tensing that he shot DeBose in self-defense because he was being dragged by DeBose's car, or because DeBose had tried to run him over. The video captures the last moments of DeBose's life after he was stopped for not having a second license plate on the front of his car and after a discussion about whether he had his driver's license on him. Here is audio from the body cam video.
I'm going to ask you again. Do you have a license on you?
I have a license. You can run my name.
Okay. Is that not on you then?
I don't think I have it on.
Be straight up with me. Are you suspended?
No, I'm not suspended.
Why don't you have your license on you?
I'm sorry,
bro.
I'm going to go in the house.
Okay. Where do you say that? Down here? Okay. Well, until I can figure out if you have a license or not, go ahead and take your seatbelt off for me.
I didn't even do nothing.
Go ahead and take your seatbelt off. Stop.
Hamilton County Prosecutor Joseph Dieter said of the killing, quote, "This was an asinine act which did not have to occur. There was no reason for this, and now Tensing will face a murder charge." The indictment was announced 3 days after the Movement for Black Lives convened a weekend gathering in Cleveland, Ohio, where two police officers remain under investigation in the November 22, 2014 shooting death of 12-year-old Tamir Rice. The Cleveland Police Department is now operating under a federal reform agreement after DOJ probe of the department's use of force practices and policies. Malaya Davis, a Cleveland native and a member of the Ohio Students Association, told Cleveland.com that while other cities were considered to hold the convening, Cleveland stood out because of Rice's death and the death of 37-year-old Tanisha Anderson. Anderson, who suffered from mental illness, died after she was placed in a restraint hold by an officer in the street outside her family's home. Organizers said the convening was an important space for interaction among activists, many of whom have only connected through social media. As news of yesterday's indictment and the killing of Samuel DeBose is spreading today, a coalition is outside the Department of Justice right now delivering a petition with a 500,000 signatures demanding that U.S. Attorney Loretta Lynch open a federal investigation into the death of Sandra Bland, who was found hung in her cell in Waller County, Texas. After being profiled, bullied, assaulted, and arrested by State Trooper Brian Encinia. Also, activists locally and nationally are weighing in during these way early rounds of the 2016 presidential campaign. Volunteers for Bernie Sanders organized more than 3,000 grassroots gatherings last night in homes, coffee shops, and union halls in all 50 states. Speaking last night from a house party here in Southwest D.C., Bernie Sanders, candidate for president, spoke to an estimated 100,000 people who tuned in, and he also specifically addressed the Black Lives Matter movement, police brutality, and murders by police, and systemic racism. Larry Cohen, past president of the Communications Workers of America, was also online to help launch the volunteer organizing drive.
We can all feel this, not just in this room, but in 3,500 rooms. We're part of an historic moment, but our job is to build an historic movement. Thanks for joining us tonight, working with us in the days and months ahead. Solidarity and good night.
Bernie Sanders' campaign organizer said that as planning for their house parties ramped up this week, students at a Seattle community college came up with the idea of giving everyone a pocket constitution and a packet on Bernie's platform. And a group in Texas is cooking up briskets and biscuits for Bernie. In other presidential election news, tomorrow activists will be rallying outside Jeb Bush's super PAC, Right to Rise, to draw attention to that $100 million political action committee. According to Rio Tazewell, a political organizer for People for the American Way, our current campaign finance system makes a mockery of our democracy. While the FEC technically forbids candidates from coordinating with their super PACs, the current coordination rules still allow super PACs to have an enormous impact on our campaigns and ultimately our elections. Joining me now in the studio to further discuss the Right to Rise super PAC is Diallo Brooks, People for the American Way's Director of Outreach and Public Engagement. Good morning, Diallo.
Good morning.
Okay. And also to discuss the flip side of PACs and how they can be used to advance progressive ideas and priorities is Jerry Peliquin, who is starting the PAC Sustain America to support candidates who support sustainable energy, sustainable agriculture, and food supplies and other forms of sustainable living. Welcome, Jerry.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, well, Jerry is via Skype. Diallo's in the studio. All right. So, Diallo, tell us a little bit more about how these super PACs are actually able to violate the law. Apparently, they're not supposed to work directly with candidates, but are they doing that?
Well, I mean, I think they're walking that tightrope. I think what's happening now post Citizens United decision, we see a lot of money being poured into the election system that used to be regulated through the rules as it relates to candidates themselves. And now the candidates are forming these super PACs that have this money flow through them and then they spend in the election cycle. And this is very scary and dangerous because it really helps to drown out the voices of the average American citizen here in this country and makes it more difficult for those of us that care about other issues aside from those of big corporations and big money to penetrate during an election cycle.
Okay, so the big protest is tomorrow outside of Jeb Bush's super PAC, Right to Rise PAC. And that's going to be at 9:30 a.m. And the Right to Rise PAC is 601 Pennsylvania Avenue in Northwest D.C. So what's your main message at this PAC, and why specifically target that one?
Well, we're specifically targeting this one because Jeb Bush, his PAC has raised over $100 million already going into the 2016 cycle, and it's still pretty early in the process. And we want to make sure that Jeb Bush knows and the rest of the country knows that we don't want this big money from these big corporate donors influencing our elections, and we want to push back against Jeb Bush. But also, more broadly, we just want to bring attention and awareness to the amount of money that's being spent in these elections and how these super PACs are really drowning out the voices of average citizens in this country.
So how does this compare with what's being raised on behalf of Hillary Clinton? You know, people might say, oh, People for the American Way, they're just getting on Jeb Bush because they support Hillary Clinton or a Democratic candidate.
Right.
What would you say in response
to
that?
I mean, first of all, we haven't supported any candidate in this particular election cycle, but what we've done consistently is call out the big money in elections. We want to get rid of the the system that consistently pours dramatic amounts of money into the system and doesn't allow citizens like you and me to really have a voice. What we want to see is the citizen voice, voters in, money out, into the system. And really, folks need a dramatic change in the way our campaign finance system works right now, because all of the issues we talked to, you mentioned before about the Black Lives Matter movement, all of those issues are drowned out because of so much money in the system. And so we need to fix that.
You know, I know it's not directly related, but when I watch the cable news at night, because I'm a sort of a news junkie, and I kind of keep up with, and I hear this constant refrain to all these other issues, you know, like what Trump said, what Mike Huckabee said, and it seems to be very minute and minuscule in importance compared to all these other issues that we have out here occurring in society. And so you see the networks who are getting hoping to get this major funding in through advertising for the campaign season, starting already to rev up this campaign coverage that seems so superficial. So it's not super PAC money per se, but super PACs often buy these ads.
Correct.
On network television and cable television. So it's starting already, and it's making me nauseous. But do you know about the other super PACs? Like, what are some of the other ones? Like, for example, what's the biggest super PAC supporting Hillary Clinton?
I'm blanking on the name of the super PAC supporting Hillary Clinton, but a lot of the candidates on both sides of the aisle are setting up super PACs because that's just basically the way the game is being played right now. And in order for folks to be able to compete, they have to set up super PACs in order to raise the type of money it takes to penetrate in this election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, this is a dangerous form, because then we start losing on both sides of the aisle opportunities to really have real conversations about real issues that are impacting real people every day.
Right.
That's why we're pushing in general about taking the money out of the system, particularly from these big billionaire donors. And like you said, these cable news stations, they benefit because they get all these ad buys, and they get more and more expensive because there's less and less availability because of the amount of money. And so we want to push back against that, both sides of the aisle.
Okay. Now, speaking of this being the way that the game is played right now,
mm-hmm.
My other guest on the line, Jerry Peliquin, he's actually started something, a super PAC called Sustain America. And I want him to talk a little bit about, Jerry, talk a little bit about why you set that up and, you know, what that's all about.
Well, I think your other guest hit the nail on the head. There's tons of money flowing into the system, unregulated funds, essentially, that are being spent, that no one's fooling anybody, are being spent in support of specific candidates. One of the problems that that our system has from our perspective is that decisions are being made based upon partisan politics and on greed and avarice, not on sustainable, reasonable decision processes. So that's why we formed Sustain America. Sustain America has three principles. We're an issues-driven organization, not a political organization. We're not bipartisan. We're nonpartisan. We believe that there are three reasons to make sustainable decisions. One, economic viability. Is this a good decision? Does it make sense? Two, environmental soundness. Will this damage the environment? And three, social responsibility. Is this a socially just decision? Those are the criteria that should be used, not partisan politics. And that's our mission. That's what we tend to do.
Okay, now you're D.C.-based. I think you were last on the air here at WPFW talking about fish farming and other types of sustainable agriculture.
Yes.
So why go switch from that, or it's not really a switch, but why evolve from that activity to the point of forming a super PAC?
Well, it's an interesting process, clearly. As you look at my background, I've worked for the Grameen Foundation in Bangladesh. I was a consultant to USAID. And I've always been concerned about social and economic justice, because without economic justice, there can be no social justice. The Family Fish Farm Network came out of work we did in Africa, where we were endeavoring to start small entrepreneurial organizations so that people could feed themselves and achieve food security. That translated back here to the United States. We began that process here, and we realized that the political system was so biased against anything that had to do with social justice that it was a major issue. Of course, I'm an American. I live in America. I'm a patriot. I spent 6 years as a United States Marine. I believe in this country. And if we're on the wrong path, if we don't change the way we make decisions, if we don't change, as your guest said, get the big money out of politics. And what happened is the 1% made a mistake, I believe. In creating this super PAC concept, they opened the door to people like Stephen Colbert, who on a joke raised $86 million.
Okay.
The idea here is to use sustainability, a rational basis for decision making, as a criteria and a litmus test to apply to all policies, programs, and processes that are developed here in Washington. Let's hold people accountable. Let's establish an index. Let's talk about reasonability versus veniality.
Okay, so how does a super PAC make a difference? For example, will you support certain candidates? Will you run ads about sustainable energy and agriculture? And why should people support it? It's a new PAC. They don't know anything about it. Why should they support it?
Sure. We're taking as our model Citizens Climate Lobby. Citizens Climate Lobby has been extraordinarily effective with the political agenda. So we will support not candidates, but issues. We won't not necessarily support Bernie Sanders, but many of his issues are concentric with our thinking. The other issue, of course, is as your guest said, is the tremendous amount of unregulated funds that are running through the system and really suborning the ballot. You know, it should that we still control the ballot, and if we realize that we can change the system, if we can get the political will to act, which is in our mission statement, I believe we can make a difference. By entering the political dialogue early in the campaign, I think we can switch some of the discussion to the kinds of decisions that are being made and the reasons for them.
Okay, and so if someone wants to get involved with Sustain America, how do they do that?
Well, we have a page on LinkedIn. It's sustainamerica.kickofflabs.com, which is you get on there, you can put in your email address. We're early. We just got our approval 10 days ago from the FEC. So we're very early in the process. We're working on a website. We're going to be out there. We're just not out there yet.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to be the first one to let everyone know about it. And Diallo, how can people, again, connect with what you're trying to do around this right to rise?
Right to Rise PAC rally. So like you mentioned before, the rally is we're gathering at 9:30 a.m. on 601 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest. Organizations like the CWA, Communications Workers, and Public Citizen, People for the American Way, and others organizing this event. It's an excellent opportunity to kind of coalesce with a bunch of activists that are working both here in D.C. but also nationally on these types of issues. And we just want folks to be able to come out and make their voices heard.
And that's tomorrow morning.
That's tomorrow morning.
At
9:30, yes.
That's right. And so, you know, we've actually spoken to Public Citizen and other organizations around the issue, movetoamend.org, and other people around the issues of Citizens United and funding of elections. So what's next for the movement? After this rally, what do you need to see happen to move that process along? I know there's a petition that people can sign, but what can happen next?
Well, I mean, a lot of the organizations are working on amendment campaigns really to change the Constitution based on what happened with Citizens United decision and the McCutcheon decision that really floods this money into the system even more so than it was before. But also what we're doing, too, is also highlighting what's happening during this election cycle as well, because what we're seeing is unprecedented amounts of money that are flooding the system, and folks are frustrated with that. I think average citizens are very frustrated with that because it's not addressing the issues that are core and of value to those folks. It's really, like you said, connected to the billionaires that are out there influencing the system. So what we'll do is we'll continue to highlight that. We'll continue to utilize the campaign around fixing the Constitution to allow Congress to regulate money in elections. Once again, and we'll continue to call out all of the candidates that spend in ways and kind of rig the system with the super PAC, particularly around the particular candidates as they're pushing their particular agenda throughout the cycle.
Okay. So I've been speaking with Diallo Brooks, People for the American Way's Director of Outreach and Public Engagement, and also Jerry Peliquin, who is starting the PAC Sustain America. to support issues around sustainable energy, sustainable agriculture, and other forms of sustainable living. Thank you both for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now, finally, in our culture and media moment, even though a string of Republican contenders have used the agreement negotiated by the Obama administration as political fodder to attack President Obama and Democrats, celebrities including actor Morgan Freeman and Jack Black released a video supporting the nuclear agreement and the avoidance of more war, death, and destruction in the Middle East. The video was produced by Global Zero, and it's up on YouTube. We're going to listen to it now.
I love playing frisbee with my sons.
I love the sound of the waves on the Pacific at sunrise.
I love curling up with a good book.
I love to see my grandkids smile.
But if Congress sabotages the nuclear deal with Iran,
we could be denied the very moments that make our lives worth living.
Why? Dude, because we'd be dead.
Super dead.
Like totally fried by a major nuclear bomb dead.
I won't be able to play frisbee with my sons because there won't even be a frisbee. The frisbee will be melted.
We will be melted.
Or worse.
Yes, Natasha, but most people think toast is delicious. This would not be that kind of toast. It would be like a really dark, unpleasant cloud of death toast.
Whoa! We're not actually worried about Iran dropping a nuclear weapon on the United States.
Holy sh**. Is that...
Yes, Jack, it's me, Queen Noor from Jordan.
Look, it is true that if Congress sabotages this deal, there would be nothing stopping Iran from getting the bomb. That would likely spark an arms race throughout the region.
Precisely, Ambassador Pickering.
Ultimately, we could be forced into a war with Iran, another dangerous, drawn-out, and expensive conflict in the Middle East with many lives lost.
So wait, are you saying that instead of a quick, toasting type of death, that in a war with Iran, maybe a lot of people would die much more slowly? Like if they were put into, say, an immense crock pot for a really, really long time?
Natasha, I don't think you need a surrealistic food metaphor to comprehend the sheer recklessness of a war with Iran. Once a war begins, the chances of Iran developing a nuclear weapon would only increase.
Wait a second. That's Valerie Plame. Valerie Plame is in this flipping video. Valerie, do you know that because you're a spy?
I'm not going to answer that question, Jack.
I think what Valerie is saying is that the agreement currently on the table is the best way to ensure Iran doesn't build a bomb.
And it gives the international community unprecedented access to verify that Iran is keeping up its end of the bargain.
A strong deal built on international diplomacy is the best way forward.
And the alternative to that is war.
War with Iran is a really bad idea.
The worst idea ever.
Look, we all love our children, and the Iranians love their children.
And we've got a deal on the table that keeps us all safe.
Do me a favor, okay? Don't let some hot-headed member of Congress screw that up.
Because playing politics with our national security is actually not all that funny.
Call Congress, tell them, support diplomacy. It's the only sane solution.
And believe me when I say to you, I hope the Iranians love their children too. Sting.
Again, that video was produced by Global Zero, globalzero.org, and has been viewed more than 159,000 times on YouTube. And those are our headlines and happenings. When we come back, indictments, a national convening, and petitions to the Department of Justice all converge. The movement sparked by the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson nears its one-year anniversary. Stay with us.
From my worries, worries free.
welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. Well, as we near the one-year anniversary of the uprising in Ferguson, Missouri, which occurred after the killing of unarmed teenager Michael Brown by police officer Darren Wilson, we're continuing with our conversations with activists both here in the DMV and around the country. With me for this segment is Kimone Freeman, a founder of DC Ferguson and also a media colleague at WEAC Radio. And DC Ferguson sprang up in the aftermath of Ferguson, but it has also addressed local issues of policing, like the jump outs, the so-called jump outs, which undercover police officers jump out, usually at young African-American males on the street and frisk them. It's kind of DC's version of stop and frisk. So they've addressed a lot of local issues as well. So good morning, Kimone. We didn't hear you at first. Okay. Good morning. Okay. So, you know, I know that there's a Department of Justice. Department of Injustice. Action this morning, actually, to deliver more petitions, this time around the death of Sandra Bland in Texas. And, you know, it's almost to the point where these things are happening so frequently, we have to kind of, you know, make an Excel sheet of these horrific killings and this, what one activist described to me as a slow genocide, like in our community. So we're 1 year later, almost 1 year later. August 9th was when Michael Brown was killed in Ferguson, Missouri. So I wanted to get a sense from you about the past year and where things stand right now. So let's talk about the latter first. You know, where do things stand right now? And give me your reflections on this national convening that just happened in Ohio. I know that you weren't on the ground there, but you have an overview of where things stand nationally.
Yes. Because I didn't attend, but I did watch some live streams of it. And I think it's great to have a national convening to try to, as Harry Belafonte would say, the agenda is to find the agenda. And I don't believe they found the agenda in Cleveland, because one of the problems that we have with the Black Lives Matter movement at this time is the infrastructure aspect of it. We don't have readily identified our Rustin, who were organized on the ground and made sure that if there was a check they wanted to donate to support the Black Lives Matter movement, that it found its way to those who were actively doing the work. We don't have that infrastructure as of yet, because we're trying to be, you know, a group of leaders, and oftentimes in doing that, it's a herd of cats instead of a crowd of lions. So it's growing pains. I'm not reinforcing any criticisms from elitist comments like Oprah Winfrey or people such as that ilk, who have the resources that could be brought to bear to provide that type of infrastructure. Having said that, we need to also identify the targets of our frustration. We can no longer depend solely upon marches and protests. We have to turn the lessons of the past, and the most effective means of wresting power from those who have power is economic boycotts. And I think that Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and also Wells Fargo should be targeted, and we should divest our money out of those banks, because these banks are heavily invested in private prisons, the largest prison system on the planet. Of course, that's not directly related to Sandra Bland's case, but it does bring to bear to amplify our issues. And until we start to hit them where it hurts, Black Fridays, because last year we affected Black Friday by over 5%. That's not like a small amount, but that was millions of dollars that was not spent on Black Friday. But the problem was they turned right around and spent it that weekend.
You know, I actually had heard 13%, but I are you particularly stressing the Black Lives Matter portion?
Well, no, but please correct me. We can debate over the exact percentage. I'll go with your number.
Yeah.
I'll go with your number. Maybe I'm giving you the National Park Service accounting.
that always lesser number, right?
Yeah.
So you talked about, well, I'll put it this way. Not long ago, I was talking to you, and you said you were tired of marching, and then you just said that, you know, we have to do more than just march. And how do you think the movement could best implement these types of strategies you're talking about, targeting Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, you know, other investors in the prison industrial complex?
Well, the beauty about the Sandra Bland case, if there's any, if I could be so bold to use the word beauty in regards to her case, is really about her words. She left us a testimony. She was active on social media. She actually made statements that we should take to heart. And she talked about the power of social media. She talked about the significance of Black Lives Matter and what we need to do. And I think we need to follow her words. We do understand that Facebook and Twitter are glorified advertising agencies who commodify our relationships and monitor the flow of information. But having said that, if used properly, it can be a spiderweb that can be combined to tie up lions, as an Aspen proverb would say. And so that's what I think we need to do. We need to communicate, each of us need to communicate what these agenda items should be and what the action agenda items should be. We're very short on the action agendas. We have a Million Man March 20th anniversary here coming up October 10th, Justice or Health. I'm hoping that they will have an action agenda attached to this. But I threw those three banks out there because those are easy targets, because there are millions of Black people who have bank accounts in those banks. If everyone divested from those banks right now, that would change the game and up the ante in our protesting right now.
Right. I remember, I think it may have been after the 2008 meltdown when there was a campaign about Bank of America and its role in basically fleecing so many people, particularly African Americans, out of their homes. And, you know, I know I ended my account at that time. And, you know, I've had a lot of challenges since then. But still, I mean, I definitely took that stand. It's not that hard to do. Sometimes, you know, we keep certain accounts for the convenience of it. And the certain institutions are so, you know, frequent in our community. There are a lot of outlets. And so people become dependent on the convenience, you know.
Well, here locally, the D.C. government does business with Wells Fargo. So we should bring pressure to be should be brought to bear for them to change as well. And when I say divest from those banks, I'm not saying then turn around and divest into another corporate entity. We should be all invested in small local banks, I would even dare say Black-owned banks, and pool our resources in that fashion. I think Industrial Bank would love to hear that.
You know, you mentioned Sandra Bland's case, and I heard you speaking recently about a new initiative and around particularly protecting women. Can you tell me about that and who's sponsoring
that? Yes. Sandra Bland, you know, case of course infuriated me and to the fact that we cannot even protect our women, you know, and this harks back to slavery, the inability of a Black man being able to protect their women. And here locally, there was a sister who, because of a 75-cent fare deficiency, not someone that jumped the turnstile and was running through the train station. We're talking about a young lady who got off of work and found herself shortchanged getting on the bus. She put in a dollar fare, and the fare was $1.75. And we've all been there if you ride the Metro on a consistent basis at some point. So that is not a criminal act, or at least it shouldn't be. And when she was 75-cent deficient on that fare, two plainclothes white police officers then escorted her off the bus. Not the bus driver called the police or whatever, but they were already on the bus because they had been targeting these low-income areas for fare evasion. And when they escorted her off the bus, there was attempting to write her a citation for the fare deficiency. She could not produce a government ID. And because she did not have a government ID on her person, they arrested her because they would not accept the information she was given to them to identify herself in order to execute the citation. And not only did they arrest her, they threw her to the ground and put her knee in the back like they was in Texas. And this was covered here locally on Channel 4 News. And we just had her on her story with Courtney Dow just yesterday. And when this information came to me, I was so infuriated that I knew I had to do something about that. And what we did was that we created a Credo Mobile campaign that simply says this: no man should put his hands on a woman. And if male police officers do not have the authority to search a female, then they shouldn't have the authority to put their hands on a female, period. And that they should call a female officer for that. Now, of course, it's not a panacea, but it is a wedge that could drive and begin the process of arresting community control over the police. So I urge everyone to go to Credo Mobile. It's called the Female Treatment Protection Campaign, STP, and sign that. You can find it on our Facebook page, Kimon Freeman, and hopefully your listeners will choose to do something.
Okay. Yes, and before we go to a break, I wanted to also ask about two other cases that I was wondering, I hadn't really, you know, I've been following D.C. Ferguson, and I wanted to find out if the organization had done anything around two other cases involving women locally. Miriam Carey, the woman who had her toddler, you know, child in the back seat, and she was shot to death after a high-speed chase from the White House down Pennsylvania Avenue. Police shot her. They claimed that she broke through a barricade, but it really wasn't a barricade. It was something that one officer was holding in his hand, and she went past it. The other case is Natasha McKenna in Virginia, and she died in the custody, I believe, of the Fairfax police after being tased four times. She died after this multiple tasing. So because, you know, we look at these cases from around the country, and I think that these are two cases that we have right here in D.C. that, I don't know, I don't think they've been lifted up like I've seen other cases in names.
Well, as you well, you know, as well as I, that there are so many cases, so many instances happening almost or nearly on a daily basis that it's almost impossible to keep up with each one, and we do need to have the infrastructure so we can lift each and every name of it. Because the FBI and the police department across America has already said that they're not even keeping up with the names and the counting of everyone that they kill. I think it's imperative that we do that. But in terms of D.C. Ferguson, it was a vainglorious organization that was created in response of Mike Brown's lynching in the streets and the Black Lives Movement that ensued. Unfortunately, we have a difference of opinion on how to move forward. So there's a spinoff group that's been created called Stop Police Brutality, or Stop Police Terror, led by the capable hands of Eugene Thierry. But we are debating on what is the active, you know, way to address this systemic changes that is necessary, because we are still, for all intents and purposes, trying to appease to the conscience of and morals of people who have no conscience or morals. So the agenda, again, as Harry Belafonte said, is to find the agenda, and that is where we are. We're at a crossroads of the movement, and we're trying to figure out which way to go.
Okay, now I hope you can stay with me. We're going to take some callers after the break.
I'll be here with you till 12 o'clock.
Okay, so we're going to go to a break right now. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm your host, Esther Averam, and I'm in conversation with activist Kimone Freeman. And we'll continue this discussion after the break. And you can join us by calling 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. We'll be right back.
Like a river flowing free through wind and the sea, free to be sure of what I am and who I need not be. Free
and all. And I am free to be nowhere. And Welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition for July 30th, 2015 on 89.3 FM, WPFW, your Pacifica listener-powered station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. On the Ground and onthegroundshow.org are devoted to coverage of social justice activists and activism here in the DMV. I'm Esther Avarim, and I'm continuing my conversation with Kamone Freeman, local, I'd say, police reform activist and also media colleague at weacradio.org. So thanks for staying with me, Kamone.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Yeah, I would just say, I would simply say I'm just an angry black man in therapy trying to make my life count.
Okay, all right. Well, we all have our own, yeah, that's right, own our own definition, our self-definition.
I like yours as well, but thank you. Thank you.
So we're talking about cases involving women in particular and your formation of the female...
Treatment protection.
Okay, yeah,
FTP. I have the wrong. Yeah. FTP.
Right. And FTP, that has a lot of uses.
That's right.
Yeah, okay, female treatment protection program. And people can get information about it. We had a caller ask about how to, contact you. Would your Facebook page be the best way, or do you want to give out?
I can give out my information. It's Kamone Freeman, and you can find me online at kymonefreeman.com, also under the same name on Facebook. And my email is Freeman, F-R-E-E-M-A-N, at weactradio.com.
Okay. Now, you know, the DeBose case in Cincinnati, and there was an indictment yesterday of this.
Surprisingly, can you believe it?
Of this officer. Well, you know, I wasn't surprised. I thought it was coming because before the indictment actually was announced, there were all these leaks basically saying that these officials had seen the video and that it was not good. And that even the police officers, this is Officer Tensing, even his attorney said that he expected an indictment. He didn't expect an indictment for murder, but he did expect an indictment. So I thought something was going to happen. But, you know, this case is certainly going to raise again this whole support for body cams. And I know from talking to you in the past, you haven't championed body cams. And for listeners who maybe do support that type of legislation, what's your position on that? And is it because of the Eric Garner case where we
have... I can tell you that, not just because of the Eric Garner case, it's because of the Tamir Rice case. It's because we can go as far back to the Rodney King case where that video did not give a conviction. It's almost as if they tell us to not believe our lying eyes. So I'm shocked that the tape in this case resulted in an indictment because Tamir Rice is still open and under investigation after I don't know how many months. But, you know, here locally, there was a debate over implementing body cams in D.C. And, of course, Madam Mayor wasn't interested in having the footage shared to anyone. And because of the debate over that, I think they actually killed the program, if I'm not mistaken. Because the system doesn't seem to want the body cams now, I'm all for it now. I'm gonna have to pivot on my position because, in no uncertain terms, will I ever agree with the state. I was originally against body cams because it was the state that was pushing body cams, and all I saw was that they was expanding the powers of the surveillance state and the money that was going to be made in the companies that was going to be providing those cameras, and I hadn't seen convictions as a result of the uses of the footage.
Right.
So, having said that, now that they have did a 180, I must too much do a 180 to make sure that I'm at all times opposing whatever their agenda is.
Right. Now, we do have a caller, and I believe it's my listener, Tesfa. And, you know, normally I'm like, you know, whatever we talk about, it always winds up back at the Ethiopian dictator. But because I failed to actually include Obama's visit to Ethiopia this week, I think that this is an appropriate call. And I want him to talk about, Tesfa, I want you to talk about your reaction to Obama's visit to Ethiopia. I know we're kind of veering, doing a little 180 right here. But it's appropriate about Obama's visit to Ethiopia and actually meeting with the head of state there. And
it was lots of people have given lots of opinions and ideas about his visit, but his visit seems to have endorsed the dictatorship in Ethiopia, the cruelty and the genocide in Ethiopia by saying the government was democratically elected, and I am so saddened by it. But let me tell you another story about the Department of Justice.
Okay.
What the Department of Justice here in the United States in Washington, D.C. could do. A girl whose father was a parliamentary elections candidate was in his house, and the Ethiopian soldiers came to his house, shot her mother, and then killed her mother and wounded her brother, and one of the soldiers dropped his pants and was trying to rape her. The girl somehow escaped and called the Voice of America here in Washington, D.C., and told her story about the death of her mother and the wounding of her brother and the arrest of her father. This went on, the Voice of America, the whole world heard. This girl somehow escaped and came to the United States and applied for asylum to the Justice Department, and the American Justice Department denied her asylum. This is the Department of Justice we're talking about.
Well, as Kamon just said earlier, the Department of Injustice. Wow. Wow, well, you know, Tessa, you always surprise me. I was giving you this opening to just talk about Ethiopia, and you brought it back to home instead, or in addition. So thank you. Thank you for that call. 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893, if you want to also join our discussion. So, Kamon, how do you get support for this type of legislation around how women are treated, how male officers can interact with women? Because, you know, of all the things that I saw in the Sandra Bland video, I just keep hearing her say, "Don't touch me."
Right, right.
You know, I hear her saying, "Don't touch me." And I think for black women in particular, this history of the physical violence, you know, the physical violence against us, it's just like, you know, the idea of this stranger, this person who has some kind of gun authority over you, feeling they can put your hands on you. It's something very visceral for me. I that's what I keep hearing her say. "Don't touch me." And the fact that he felt like he had the right to put his hands on her is something very troubling to me. And so I really identify with this movement that you wanted to, you know, put forward in terms of protecting women and kind of defining or particularly talking about how women can be treated in the custody of male officers. There was, in addition to the case of Natasha McKenna that I mentioned in Virginia, there were some reports that while she was being tased that she was naked. You know, this was a woman who supposedly she had some mental challenges. She had that type of profile where she was perhaps receiving mental, you know, care for her mental, you know, wellness. And also there's a new video posted in the last week of a woman, and I can't remember the location, but she has been in some type of domestic disagreement with a partner. She's out on the balcony holding a towel around her and a sheet around her, and she's also obviously having like mental, you know, she's like a mental patient or whatever, and the police tase her, and you know, her blanket falls, so she's naked. And so this is a very, it's very painful for black women. It's just the whole idea of the particular nature of females and women being abused, and you know, it's very visceral for me, and I think a lot of other women. I have two more callers, and I know I've opened up something, and I'm going to have to end it soon, but let's go to our next callers. Just say your first name and where you're calling from.
Michael.
Okay. All right. Is this Michael, and are you at the Department of Justice?
No. However, I am calling about to comment on something Kimon had spoken about with the sister that was arrested by the transit authority for, I guess, not for jumping the turnstile.
No, she didn't jump the turnstile, but she just didn't have enough fare, and she was trying to ride the bus, and she gave what she had. But she didn't jump a turnstile. It was a bus situation.
Yeah, and my comment is that fits right into the broken, almost the same broken windows theory that a lot of the cops nationwide have used to victimize a lot of people of color and minorities in general.
Low-income people.
Not to mention that the transit, there have been studies that transportation is a much more efficiently run and should be actually free. I think I wrote a blog on that on cnc.com.
Okay, yeah. So in other words, with the amount of money they spend to police whether people pay a fare, people could actually ride the bus for free, and it would enhance the economy. People could get around to work. Things could be a lot more efficient if you didn't have this mechanism for paying this money, and we could put that money somewhere else. You know, let me go to our next caller. I have 1 minute, I do want to take your call, but I have like 30 seconds actually. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I have 30 seconds. Just say your first name, where you're calling from.
It's my mom. I'm just sad to say I am sick tired of this police brutality, this killing and killing and killing every day. That's what I'm trying to say. Thank you so much.
Okay, and thank you for saying it. Come on, do you have any final thoughts? 30 seconds.
Douglas, agitate, and if you do nothing else and you have a bank account with Bank of America, Chase Bank, or Wells Fargo, take your money out of that bank right now. Do something.
Okay.
And sign the petition FCP on Credo Mobile, Female Treatment Protection.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, and thank you for joining me. And so that will do it for us on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. I'm Esther Avarim, and I want to give a special thanks to my guest again, Kimon Freeman, and also earlier segments, Diallo Brooks from People for the American Way, and Jerry Peliquin, founder of the new Super PAC for Sustain America. And thanks to our engineer, Michael Nasella, for his production assistance, and thank you so much for listening and supporting your station for Jazz and Justice. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen to all of our shows and past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Now stay tuned for the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice out there. Peace.